Has your stress level dropped a little bit since the election's over now? Mine has. I've actually chart my blood pressure every morning. I check it, and it's actually lowered down. Praise God. And we started a series 3 weeks ago. We only have one lesson in because I was gone 1 week, and we had a special lesson last week. We started a series called Death of a Nation. And in that first lesson, we looked at the reality that nations are no different than people. Nations are born, they go through a life cycle, and they die. And the only one nation that will never die, as Peter says, is the Christian nation. The Christianity, God's kingdom, your passport never expires if you're a citizen of heaven. But as far as nations go here on earth, there have been hundreds and hundreds of them. Some nations you could easily boast were better than the United States, that they thought never could fall. And yet if you go back to the book of Daniel, you'll see they list four empires, massively strong empires. You have Babylon, the Medo-Persian, Greeks, and the Romans. All those empires rose, lived a life, and died. Even Israel, people of God's own possession, they were born when they were conceived at the point where Abraham was given a promise in Genesis 12. They neglected that promise through their lifestyle, and then God had that nation fall. The United States is no different. There's nothing you're going to sell me on that we're different from all those other nations. There's no new thing under the sun, Solomon says. The United States is no different. Now, I still, I'm very patriotic. I really love our country. I love the people of our country. I love many of the things about our country. But I'm not going to pretend for a moment that I'm right and God is wrong, that every nation's going to go through a life cycle. Let God be true and every man a liar, because God says all this is going away. And then the question is, whose nation are you in? I have dual citizenship right now. My first citizenship is heaven, and I hope that's yours as well. Then I have one, the United States citizenship. But that one's just a temporary one. Every nation will die. Now, part two of this is, how do earthly nations fall? Why do they always fall? What is the process in which they fall? The object of this is, there's a lot of people, myself included, who get stressed over things that go on in the country. And if we're not careful about it, it'll put us into an early grave. It's scary to see the things that go on in the world. As mentioned in the last lesson, nations rise and fall, but how? What is the process they do? Well, there's what's called applied and natural consequences. And applied consequence is, if you can imagine, if you were speeding on your way to church today, oh, I don't want to be late, I'm going to drive fast. Well, if the police officer pulls you over, he applies a consequence to you called a ticket. Your wallet will suffer. Your insurance rates will suffer. These are all applied consequences. And the idea of an applied consequence is to do something before the natural consequences kick in. The natural consequence is, if you're speeding, you might lose control of your car. You're out of control, you run into a house, another car, pedestrians. I mean, a lot of damage could happen when we do things that we should not do. So there are applied and natural consequences. Now, usually, I can't really think of any one time, if you can, great, but I believe the Bible is clear. There's natural consequences to everything we do. There's also natural blessings, too, that God builds into his word. And if someone is ignorant of the commandments of God, Okay, if you're not a Christian, if you've never studied the Bible, it doesn't matter. The natural consequences built into negative actions are going to follow you. That's how God designed it. In Romans chapter 1, verse 19 and 20, Paul says, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature has been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. Now, Paul would later go on to say about these same Gentiles, 2 verse 14 and 15, for if the Gentiles who do not have the law, he says, if they could, they do instinctively the things of the law, in that they show the work of the law written in their hearts. In other words, if a father, let's say you take a Christian father and you take a non-Christian, okay? If both these Christian fathers show love and honor and good values toward their children, then both these fathers will reap natural blessings of the labor that they put in. Doesn't matter if you're Christian or non-Christian. If I show my daughter love and care, and I do those things which are evident from the scriptures on how I should treat my daughter, then later on, I'll be blessed. So also, this will be for the Gentile or for the non-Christian. If they do the same things, that's how God designed it. See, there's so many things that are evident to us. If I love my wife, if I try to do right by her, if I try to follow the natural, logical course, you love, you take care, stay faithful, well then, when I die, I will be married to my wife. And the same thing for the Gentile, the non-believer. And this is why a lot of times you scratch your head and you say, boy, they have really great families. You know, this is really a great guy, but he's not a Christian. Because he has borrowed from what God designed that is evident apart from the scriptures. It's common sense. God built it. In our psychology, that child, just like we had it when we were younger, that child needs to be loved and cared for. That's how God designed the human being. If he doesn't get that, then he will cope with it in some way. Now, I tell you all this because not only would a person be cursed if they do not do what is evident to them, they'll also be blessed. It's called the law of the reaper, Galatians 6, 7. Whatever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. If you sow spiritual blessings, you will reap spiritual blessings. If you sow generational curses, watch out, crop is coming in. The law of the reaper is very, very easy, as taught in Galatians 6. You reap what you sow, you reap more than you sow, and you always reap after you sow. That's how it works. Now, there are what is called national consequences. The same is true among nations, for nations are simply made up of individuals. Peter states in Acts 10, 34 and 35, I most certainly understand that now God is not one to show partiality, but in every nation, the man who fears God and does what is right is welcome to him. And simply put, the nation that embraces the natural laws that are easily evident through the observation of his creation, things will likely go well for that country. When a nation goes against God's intrinsic built-in values he's put in our actions, when you go against it, then those blessings will not be there. The vacuum sucks in the curses at that point. What are the natural laws of nations? God spelled it out. You remember when he was assembling that nation called Israel? We need to simply go back and look at those Ten Commandments of the Jews. There are 10 specifics that God required the Jews to embrace in order to be a blessed nation. If they failed, the nation would be cursed. The Ten Commandments were nothing more than 10 principles being specified to the Jews. In Exodus 20, verse 5 and 6, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generations who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands and to those who love me and keep my commandments. How does one go from the specific commands given to the Jews and then carry it over to everybody else? It's very simple. God gave those principles in specific form to the Jews. But his principles, when we're told to not fall for the error of unprincipled men, you know, we have a principled God. If you're trying to always go with specifics, you know, people read the Bible and they say, okay, I want to be told exactly what to do. That's not how God works. God shows us principles, what he values, where the blessings are, and we have a choice to do it or not. And so we look at the principle behind all the commands that God gives us. And what I'm about to give you are the principles. God doesn't want us doing something without reason. God doesn't say, you know, I want you to do this. It isn't because he says, watch this, Michael, Gabriel, all you angels, come here. I can get Doug to jump through a hoop. That's not what he's trying to do. He's trying to connect me with the blessings which are intrinsic to him. And so he wants divine protection and benefits to us. So when we do something, God expects us to reason. Why does he want us to do this? Isaiah 1 verse 18. And so we're the child, he's the parent. He's looking out for us by showing us elementary principles that make nations strong. It's what makes people strong. Exodus 20, verse 3. You shall have no other gods before me. Principle number one, I will focus on the creator of the cosmos. The law, the Jews were delivered out of Egypt from their pagan god system. The purpose of the plagues were to deliver Israel from that. But if you look at the specific plagues that God delivered to Egypt, he was basically being a hitman for all their false gods. He struck the Nile first. That's the number two god. When he struck Ra, the sun god, that was the third ranking god. The last god that he struck on the list was death of the firstborn. He stopped the firstborn lineage of Pharaoh. Pharaoh was the number one god in all Egypt. God just went through, boom, 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 popped off the top 10 gods of Egypt to show that I am the true God. And so the principle behind this is that I will focus on the creator of the cosmos. As mentioned moments ago, it is evident. It is evident. If you say, well, I just don't believe the Bible. Well, guess what? You need to believe creation. I don't care how deep scientists dig into the science. It only further proves that we're fearfully and wonderfully made. I had somebody telling me one day, when they heard I was a preacher. And they said, oh, I don't believe that. Why don't you believe that? Well, because I know we evolved from apes. Okay, it's so evident. Well, what's the evidence? And he started talking about the complexity of the DNA molecule located in the nucleus of a cell and how complex it is. And he was waxing eloquently. And when he got done, I said, man, God is more inventive than I thought. Anything that man discovers doesn't dismiss. Where did it come from? You know, I can look at this microphone and tell it didn't form through natural wind and water erosion. We can look at creation, and there's no way. You have to be intellectually dishonest to look in a mirror to see the cellular structure of a simple leaf from a tree, from the simplest cells, a single cell amoeba, to complex neurons of the human brain. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. We cannot understand all there is to know about this intelligent designer just from looking at this intelligent design. But we certainly cannot dismiss the evidence. For to do so sends us down a path of, as Paul says, no excuse. Nobody's going to get to heaven and say, well, God, you know, I just didn't, you know, on Judgment Day, I didn't understand that, God. You know, why didn't you just come down and give me a DVD or something? God's going to say, look, every time you looked in a mirror, how could you say you're a freak accident? The 8.5 billion three-digit known codes of DNA stranded out. I mean, we are complex. We would never think anything like I used to kind of, when Andrew was like 3 years old. Now, a three-year-old could figure this out. We were driving down the road, and I saw a row of trees that farmers planted to block wind in the wintertime. And I proposed to Andrew that these trees form by random chance in a straight line. As a three-year-old, he said, no, they didn't. They were planted that way. Why is it that once you go to Harvard, you forget these things? Out of the mouth of babes. So that's the first one. I will focus on the creator of the cosmos. It should intrigue us. It should pull us in to know more about him. Number two, you shall make no for yourself, you shall not make an idol. Principle number two, I will put nothing on earth ahead of the creator. Nothing. The law is the Jewish nation was told not to be involved in idolatry. This is when men take something from creation, redesign it, and then worship it in place of the creator. That's crazy. Jehovah would not tolerate this in any form. The principle behind it is, I, this creator that I'm in search of, I will put nothing ahead of that creator. I won't do it. This is recognition of creation naturally leads us to not put anything ahead of that intelligent designer. In fact, the creator would have to be the highest being in our minds because he's the one behind us. It's like the potter bowing down to worship a pot that he made. It just doesn't make sense. The creator is much more divine. Anything else we exalt above that intelligent design would be idolatry and would violate our conscience. I saw Hindus, you know, they were making, they had this big celebration in India where they take like dung of a cow and they make pottery out of it. They make the statue of Ganesh, the elephant god, and they paint it all up and it looks great and they bow down to it and give it food and burn incense around it for like a year. And then they have this big celebration where the big parade takes this god out, throws it into the river, and then the paint flakes off. The cow dung is whittled away. Why would you worship dung? Honestly, I will never worship anything that is above God, that is below God. Won't do it. And you can't get above God, so why do it? Now, even Gentiles can see that. That's wrong. And number three, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Principle number three, I will show the highest reverence for him. The law is a Jewish man or woman, they weren't to throw God's name around idly. Oh, I swear to God or by God's temple. Jesus said, let your yea be nay, yea and your nay be nay. The principle is, you know, we're going to show the highest reverence for whoever it is out there that made this. Knowledge of the Creator and the logic to never put anyone ahead of him invokes a demonstration of reverence in our lives. You don't have to believe in the Bible to believe in the Creator. But you know what? You're not going to be satisfied believing in a Creator and not wanting to know more about him and not wanting to reverence him. Principle is, I'm going to show the highest reverence. Then remember the Sabbath. Principle four, I will dedicate time to the Creator. The law in Deuteronomy 5, verse 15 says the reason why the Jews were to take the Sabbath off was because they were slaves in Egypt. Slaves didn't have time off. And so God says, you're going to have a quiet day. You're going to take a day off. The principle is that I will take time to dedicate to this creator. Society that embraces the logic of a creator, reverences him, they're going to want to take time to devote to him. And that's just built into the formula. Honor mother and father, Exodus 20, verse 12. I will value experience and authority to others. If you look at the youngest generation in the Jewish society was to honor the generation above them. Rise up and honor the gray-headed one. God stressed, you honor that mother and father because, very simple, I will value the experience and authority of other people. Show me a kid who doesn't value that in his parents. I'll show you a troubled kid when he gets out on his own. You know, to the children, your parents are the first gods they ever know until they grow up and realize that there is a God above the parents. To a two-year-old child, when a mom or dad says no, that sounds like the voice of God to them. They're going to try to obey. If they don't obey, they won't respect God's authority later on. And this begins with the parents and extends to even the most elderly in society. God chose the birth dates of people. God chose what time we're going to be born in. And for any of us to ignore, like with Rehoboam, when he ignored the advice of the more senior citizens who gave him advice, he went against it, divided the entire nation. That is a principle that God says works in successful nations. Here's another one. You shall not murder. Exodus 20, verse 13. The principle behind that is I will value the life of my fellow man. The word for murder is murder, not kill, hence referring to human life. The Jewish nation was to value the life of all people. They were not to sacrifice their children to the fire of Moloch. They were not to kill their fellow Jew. They were not even supposed to kill sojourners who come into their country. God values life. We're made in the likeness and image of God. And the principle for any civilization to succeed, if they do not value human life within it, that nation is cursed. And it comes out in the lives of the individuals. You shall not commit adultery. In other words, I will have sexual purity. I will value sexual purity. The law, the Jewish nation, the Jews held overall marriage higher than any other nation on earth at that time. And they taught that it was trifold. Genesis 2, verse 24. Leave your mother and father, cleave unto your wife, and the two shall become one flesh. It's a family relationship, it's a lifelong relationship, and it is a sexual relationship. It's expected in marriage. And they were commanded not to be like the Gentiles who lived immoral lives. Homosexuality, incest, bestiality, necrophilia, orgies, or any other type of sexual immorality was not tolerated. The only sexual relations God said were pure was that between a man and his wife. That's it. No other. God said, that's why he had circumcision commanded. They were to stand out. A Jewish man would always be reminded that from this part all the way out, I am pure unto God. Well, the principle behind that is, I will strive to be sexually pure. The nation that holds marriage and sexual purity together, and we're going to have much evidence on this. This is just laying out the thesis. We will prove it, not with my evidence, but with the evidence of historians who I have much respect for. Not even Christian historians. People who studied history, and they know a lot more about it than you and me. And they will itemize it, and you'll see that these 10 principles are what successful nations have been built on. When a nation has a consensus that we can do whatever we want, we could have impure relations. Once they embrace that, that is another signal that that nation is about to fall. Because then families fall apart. It's messed up. Here's another one. You shall not steal. In other words, I will value personal blessings of others. The law of the Jewish people were not to be a nation of thieves, for they wanted to respect the property of others. They understood that God allows blessings to come in and out of our lives. It's God. You know, that's why we thank God for those blessings. And the principle behind that is, I will value your personal blessings too. Any nation that does not respect the personal blessings that they come down from God, and they're the result of benefits. When you hear people trying to have class envy, you know, despising the rich, you shouldn't despise the poor or the rich. It's not the love of money, or it's not when you have things that will send you where you don't want to go. It's when you let things have you. That's the difference. You know, how can you distribute your blessings if you don't have them from God? You know, you don't go stealing other things from people because you don't want to be stolen from yourself. We recognize God gives us blessings, and henceforth, I will value the personal blessings of others. That's why communism didn't work. Nobody had the incentive anymore to work. Why? Because if I worked hard and this guy didn't work hard, we both get paid the same. Why would you try harder? Why would you try to go down a path that God said, look at the blessings. Instead of following the yellow brick road, follow the blessing road. This is the path to blessings. Why would I even take that if I can't ever have those blessings? It's just wrong. And so we must value the personal blessings of others. 20 verse 16, you shall not bear false witness. In other words, I will value truth. I will value truth. And that's something in our country we're really pulling away from. For the Jewish nation, the people, God said to the Jewish nation, you will walk in truth. God knew that what came out of the mouth was anything less than the truth, it would invite evil to come in. Because if it's not the truth, it's a lie, and Satan still kills and destroys, and he's the father of lies. And if we don't embellish ourselves in the truth, we will end up being where we don't want to be. I will vow honesty in my life. For a nation to succeed, there must be a societal consensus of the value of truth. To not do so will breed distrust and chaos among the populace. Doesn't matter if you call it a half-truth, a black lie, a white lie, a mistruth, an outright lie, or any combination of the same. It's a lie. It's not the truth. You know, when the oath that we have, that you go, there was an atheist out in Las Vegas. He went to go take the oath. He was in for tax evasion. And his case was thrown out because he had to place his hand on the Bible and say, I swear to tell the truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God. He said that violated my rights. Why would I believe anything the guy says? See, when you believe you'll be judged for words that come out of our mouth, then we hold them tighter to us. See, the first five have to do more with the Creator. Establishing how do I treat the love of the Lord thy God? The greatest commands, we sang about it. Second five have to do with how do I interact these principles within the culture. You shall not covet. Principle number 10, I will value contentment. The law, Jews were not to be coveting in their heart for other people's lives. Deuteronomy 5:21 says it shouldn't be for your neighbor's wife, your desire of your neighbor's house, his male or female servant, his ox, donkeys, anything your neighbor has. God does not want, he wants us to guard our heart. He does not want us longing after earthly things. You know, trying to get every blessing, dreaming about things that maybe we shouldn't be dreaming about. The principle is I will value contentment. There's something to be said when a person is content in their life. They're not going to succumb to the earthly pulls of materialism or into the throes of hedonism and excess. When that is not present, if we don't have contentment, there is not a dependence on God, and we will go the way of the Laodiceans. Simply put, any nation, it's one of the things, if a nation wants the blessings of God, they need to be content. And all you have to do is go out on Black Friday and see some of the things that happen during this time of year, and you'll see that that's definitely an area we're slipping. But that's okay. We're going to cover us and history, where we fit in with history. And at the end of the series, we're going to cover what we can do. Okay? Our nation's going to fall. It's going to fall. All we can do is try to lengthen the life a little bit. We can be chemotherapy for a nation that's about to go away. But that's good. You can guard your generation and the generation after you, mostly your generation. History teaches us when nations embrace these principles, then they are more likely to be strong and prosperous. This is not necessarily because of the intervention from God. God doesn't come down and say, you will be blessed. He already built it into the package. You follow God, God says the blessings are built in. You can't get away from it. And the curses are built in too if you go the opposite way. It's not like God has to work 24/7. He already built it into his creation. If you run really fast into a wall, stupid. Okay, that'd be stupid. Okay, but I don't have to say that. The wall will tell you when your nose is flat. Okay? It's built in. And when a nation pulls away from this path that God set forth, he specified on the Jews, but they're God's principles. They're for every nation. Bible's clear. Any nation who follows those will be blessed and be prosperous, as it said in 10:45 of Acts. Nations pull away with secularism, irreverence, immorality, they will not stand. How do earthly nations fall? Very simple. When a nation lies when they adopt shared societal values, they will reap natural generational blessings, and the nation will be strong, and evil will not permeate it. When a nation chooses to go down the path of secularism by denying the existence or importance of God, something or someone must take its place. If that nation reaches the tipping point, then violation of even more of these will come. The first one falls. Don't hold God. Do not see a creator higher than you. Boom, 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 boom. All those other things fall. They curse the creator. They stop valuing seasoned and experienced citizens. They devalue human life. They fall into immoral behavior. They become confused over personal properties. They make truth a catchphrase at best and are drawn into rampant chaos. Some of the natural consequences result in the same. Inexperienced nations choose inexperienced leaders, make inexperienced value determinations. Human life is devalued at every step of the way. Immorality, disease, death, and demoralization ensue. People trusting their riches over God. When the nations become a nation of narcissists, each trying to seek one's own personal good, that's not what a nation is built on. Nations are built on when there's a cohesiveness of values. That's what makes a nation strong. When everyone does that which is right in his own eyes, down goes the nation. Then you just have individualism. And it will be destroyed. Not necessarily destroyed from without, but destroyed from within. Nations fall when they collectively receive the natural consequences built in for not taking God's path. For strong nations and the lives of those who dwell in it. In the next lesson, we will want to cover, what are these recognizable steps of a dying nation? We're going to start going into the detail. We're going to look at the empirical evidence of men who devoted their entire lives to the study of the rise and fall of nations. And you're going to see that this thesis will be proven out, not by a proof texting method, but by simply seeing the path. If we don't learn from history, like Winston Churchill said, the only thing we've ever learned from history is that we don't learn from history. The Christians, we need to learn from history, because we're going to be best adapted to be shining lights among this crooked and perverse generation. We can't help what the world does, but we could help our little chunk of it. Till we're done, we'll get a big mansion in heaven, don't worry. But until then, there's things we can do. So I encourage you, if you have not become a Christian yet, if you have not entered the covenant of Jesus' sacrifice, his death, burial, resurrection, you need to. Maybe you haven't been living your life. Maybe your life looks more like the world this week than it did the citizenship of heaven. You need to change that. It's important. Our deeds will follow us. The same way for nations, same for individuals. If you like encouragement to stop sowing seeds of chaos, inheriting the generational blessings of the law of the reaper, enlist the help of your brothers and sisters in Christ. When you need to come forward, let us know what's on your heart. And please, let us help you fight for it. We want you strong, because someday we're going to be there. I may be somebody there at some point. And maybe I want you healthy so that you could help me. That's part of a nation, the Christian nation. If you need to respond for any reason, do so while we stand and sing.